Hello and welcome to Middle Age Geeks, a podcast where we chat about anything geeky from movies, TV, tech, games, and everything in between. I'm one of your hosts, Daz, and this is my co-host, the super duper Phil. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good, dude. Hello, everybody. I'm doing good, man. It's been a decent week, a decent day. Well, it was until the fucking piss rain on me, man. I went out for a walk, bring the dog out for a walk, and the sun is shining, sunglasses on, listening to Bob Marley. I was like, this is just really good for my state of mind, my sense of well-being. About 15 minutes from fucking home, and the bleeding monsoon fucking rain opens up. Home to me and the dog home like fucking drowned rats. Fuck's sake. But yeah, apart from that, what about yourself?
Good, yeah, good. We're recording on a Sunday. It's been a good weekend of sun here in Ireland, which is the start of summer. You know, it goes from, in the space of 5 days, it goes from 6 degrees to 15 to 22. And everyone gets cooked alive. I spent 2 hours this morning playing tennis, got cooked alive, then went to the park with my daughter to run around, got cooked alive, then smashed my shed to pieces for the rest of the day and got cooked alive. And yeah, I was putting my daughter to bed, telling her stories and just sweating to pieces. Oh God. So yeah, if I get delirious during this episode, it is sunstroke. So no worries there. But anyway, on today's episode, we will chat through a few bits and bobs and news, what we've been playing and watching as usual. And then Phil will take us through Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which we saw yesterday. It's a good one, so we're very, very happy about that. So first and foremost, we will go through a bit of news, and there's a lot of news actually this week.
Yeah.
Firstly, the official image of James Gunn's Superman was revealed after the costume logo was revealed a few months ago. But the image features Supes sitting strangely on a chair in an apartment, casually putting on one of his boots as some crazy shit seems to be going on out the window behind him.
It's fucking chill, isn't it? Like, he's just kind of like, yeah, I'll take my time putting my boots on. Yeah, and it looks like there's a fucking meteorite or something is fucking heading towards to blow up the planet. Like, it's like, get your shit together, man.
Yeah. I thought it was cool. Look cool. The costume looks good. I mean, like, when you look a little closer, you can see that the red shorts or the red pants they're back. You can see them kind of in the shadow. They're kind of obscured a little bit. Yeah, I thought it looked great. And when you look a little closer, you can see, like, people are saying, oh, it looks totally chill. Like, he's just fucking, you know, came out of the shower or something. But when you look at the suit, the S is kind of charred a bit. It's just like he's after being in battle, you know, maybe he's getting ready for round two or something like that. And maybe that explains the kind of more, is it a relaxed look on his face or is he kind of going, oh, fuck's sake, here we go again. But yeah, I thought it was good. I thought the suit looked good. To say it's divisive and polarizing online is incredible. Like, just listen to comments. Some people have just so much fucking hate. Like, there's a fucking load of shit, whatever. They changed the suit again. The pants are back and all this. And I was reminded of a beautiful response that Bryan Singer gave to someone. I think it was 2005 Comic-Con for Superman Returns. And someone got up in the audience, you know, to ask a question to the panel. And they asked him, why have you changed the suit? And he replied, change it from what? You know, and the guy was just completely stumped. He's like, what have I changed it from? This character's been around for fucking 80 plus years. There's been 40 plus iterations of the suit. Like, what have I changed it from? You know, just cop on. Like, it's constantly evolving. So, yeah, it's all look great. The purple pinky shit, laser, light show, whatever that's going on outside the window, kind of hints at Brainiac in terms of that color scheme. Just like, yes, please.
Yeah. Are you having PTSD then from fucking Suicide Squad game?
Oh,
I can't take it.
Not again. Yeah, Zack Snyder, just to get his name in there.
I think we're going to have to put a limit, like, of three times per episode you're allowed to complain about Zack Snyder.
Just that wasn't really a complaint.
Yeah, just, we'll give you three, or we'll eventually maybe start on five and wean you down over episodes as we go on.
It's baby steps, a 12-step program. We'll get there. But I think that looked good, and it's out next summer. And just, I think once we get a trailer or more kind of a still from the actual production, I think it'll look even better. But next up was a piece of news that only requires just one line to just sell it completely. And I was telling you this yesterday in the after the cinema, and it was like Amazon Prime have greenlit a new series called Blade Runner 2099, and it cast Michelle Yeoh in the lead role as a replicant nearing the end of her life. And straight away, it's like, yes, yeah, that's it. Sold. Happy days, on to the next story. that's it. It's just fucking yes, fucking please. Dead. And Amazon Prime, you know, before Fallout, you would have been a little worried because they were so fucking hit and miss. But after the Fallout show, it's such a smash hit that you're just hoping they keep it coming and keep it going. But yeah, like, sign me up for that 100%. We're massive Michelle Yeoh fans. Like,
yeah. I was fucking cheering when she got the Oscar. I'm absolutely delighted for that. Can't wait. Like you say, I think maybe a few people might have been a bit after the Rings of Power and things like, you know, Carnival Row and stuff that they've had exclusives that were a bit, well, shit, you know, and you kind of like, well, fuck, what are they going to do? And then, but then, you know, Fallout's excellent, you know. So, yeah. I have high hopes for it. I'm hoping it'll be a good one.
Yeah, happy days. And on gaming news, there's a few stories, but one was Helldivers 2. There was a bit of uproar over the last few weeks where Steam players were being required to sign in with a PS Plus account to create a PlayStation account to play online, which was driving people fucking demented, as it would, because you don't have a PlayStation. Yeah. You don't need to sign up and sign up for this just to play online, which is nonsense. But the backlash was so severe online that they have made a complete U-turn. And I love when this happens in the gaming community, in any community, where they said, fuck that, man.
They downvoted the shit, like, the review bombed and everything, yeah.
It's like, this happens so many times when people implement, or companies and developers implement, you know, crazy microtransactions, or they hide game content behind paywalls and stuff like that, and there's an uproar, and then they go, okay, sorry, and everyone goes, yay, and just like, no, but you're still a fucking asshole for trying to do this in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
I bought my game, like, but yeah, it's good to see that the community has won out on this occasion. And speaking of game studios and devs, Xbox or Microsoft have, I think a few days ago, shut down 4 studios that they acquired, and there's been uproar over this, and I was incensed, as 2 of the studios, one of them is Arkane Austin, that made the Dishonored, the first game, I think, and made Prey.
Yeah.
And obviously they made Redfall last year, which was a complete fuck up, but that was more because they were being pushed to do an online, you know, multiplayer live service game, which is not, it's not what they really do. But also then the other company was Tango Gameworks, which was responsible for Hi-Fi Rush, which was one of my games of the year last year.
That's what you were talking about, yeah.
Absolutely stunning fucking game. And this is coming after Xbox let 1,900 people go in January of this year. And like, this is a $3 trillion company. And they actually, like, last week, they said they beat their quarterly expectations by 20%, posting profits of 22 billion. For the first quarter of 2024. And they had previously heaped high praise for Tango Gameworks, saying Hi-Fi Rush was one of the games of the year, and it had, you know, over 3 million players. And the fact that, the head of gaming in Microsoft said that they didn't have enough. This was their excuse. They said, we're actually run pretty thin, and we didn't have enough resources really to run all these kind of studios that, you know, and it's, you know, poor us. And it's like, you bought all these fucking companies, man. You spent, like, you just recently spent $80 billion on Activision.
And Blizzard, fucking hell.
And Bethesda as well. It's just like, why are you buying all these studios if you hadn't planned running them? Like, seriously, I'm not a fucking business expert, but this is fucking business 101. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's clownery on an astonishing scale. And the online backlash has been incredibly severe for Microsoft, who are like not exactly riding high in terms of game respect. You know what I mean? And it's like, recently there was a payout for one of their high executives, and he was paid $375 million when he left from Microsoft. And someone did the maths and said that would have paid the salaries for Arkane and Tango employees for about 18 years. which is unbelievable.
For fuck's sake, you know, like...
And they shut down Tango. It's not like they just kind of went, okay, you know, we're letting you go or whatever. It's just they shut down the company these people like developed and blood, sweat, and tears and all that. But they shut down Tango Gameworks, which is a Japanese company, while their employees were all on holidays for a big Japanese holiday. So it's just like, come on, man. But yeah, it's just, reading it, it really got me fucking incensed more than I expected. And it was close to throwing my Xbox out the fucking window. Like, because, you know, we talked about this, the amount of video game developers losing their jobs is increasing at an alarming rate. And in 2024, it's about 10,000 have lost their jobs so far. And that's, I think in 2023, it was 10,500 people lost. And that was a clusterfuck of a year. And already we're like halfway through May and it's just, these corporations are not supporting their creatives and they're throwing employees and studios and developers under the bus because of their fucking business fuck ups. So yeah, rant over. It just did my fucking nut in.
Yeah.
Very, very. Yeah. Cause it's just one of the best games. Like Hi-Fi Rush is just incredible game. And like, what do you do as a developer now? If like you have an award winning game, it won a BAFTA for fuck's sake. And Xbox. Like,
If that's not enough to keep you, you know what I mean? Yeah. In a job, then what the fuck is, you know?
Oh man. Yeah. Scary things going forward. But, how about yourself? Any news particular fancy this week?
Well, I suppose gaming wise, the one it's something I was both looking forward to is that Nintendo said they'll announce a new console within the fiscal year. Now I don't know when the Japanese fiscal year is. Like I think it could give them right up until like April next year or something like that to announce it. So, but that I'm delighted at least there's some actual official news starting to come out. You know. And then some other than for most of the other stuff I wanted to talk about was and Hades 2, the early access reviews are out Hades 2. And they're apparently amazing, which I think we knew it was going to be. The first game is fucking fantastic. And I think there's way more voice acting in this one. You know, like for the last one you had voice acting, but then it switched to
the amount of dialogue in that first game is astonishing.
Oh, it's amazing. It's so good. It's like a joy to replay over and over again as those games are supposed to be.
I never even finished that. I didn't get I must have, for anyone who doesn't know yet, it's like a roguelike game where you keep doing run after run after run when you die, but the story keeps evolving. But I swear I was on like fucking 200 or 300 runs going through, and it's still, you're going up to a character going, well, will I talk to them or not? And you talk to them, and it's a completely new lines of dialogue, and a new fucking story kind of evolves from that.
Yeah.
Blew my mind. Roll on. But I don't know when that game's out, actually, but bring it on.
I don't know when the full game is out now, but it's good to hear the early access is going as well as we thought it would. Then movie wise, the Furia, after fucking years of being in Is It Will It Won't It, is officially in production. So Furia is the new Riddick movie with Vin Diesel. And like, I love Pitch Perfect. It's fantastic. But I could take or leave the other ones. It's a big cool action.
Pitch Perfect, did you say?
Yeah. Did I say Pitch Perfect? By the way, I will out myself as a Pitch Perfect fan, all right? I love that movie.
Starring Vin Diesel.
More accurately, I love Anna Kendrick. Pitch Black, like it's fantastic, which I think they renamed as Riddick Chronicles Pitch Black, you know, after they write out the other ones.
That's a brilliant.
The other ones are they're fine, you know, but the Pitch Black is just fucking great. Like for low budget, like some of the camera work is incredible in it. It's really, really good. So looking forward to that. What else? There's going to be another Kong and Godzilla movie. You know, we talked about how we wouldn't even do it for the show because, you know, fuck that. They've announced there's already another one in the works, and this one is still in theaters. Like, they must be fucking raking it in. I assume they're raking it in.
Yeah, I wonder what the budget is on it, because I can't imagine, like, it's not breaking any records, or it's never really in, like, oh, this made this much, you know.
And
a top story in any news sites or on YouTube or anything, so they must have found a way just to make it for cheap or whatever. I don't know how it even looks. Does it look like the trailers? It looks pretty. But like it's kind of visual effects, Marvel visual effects, where it's cartoony and they just churn it out very quickly.
Yeah, it's fucking. I've no interest. I the Gorilla versus, or what's it called? Gorilla fucking Kong versus Godzilla. that one, that first one. I watched it just
Gorilla versus Dragon.
Gorilla versus Big Fucking Dragon. I watched it just because, you know, okay, it's two gigantic monsters fighting each other, but I can't do it again. Like, it once was enough. No, it was shit. Like, and the thing is that they're just people are obviously going to see them. I think it's just like the Transformers movies. I mean, you could crank out a Transformers movie every couple of years and it'll make money because people will keep going to see them. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. But that's about it. I'm just looking forward to some stuff coming out because I haven't really been, when we get into the next section, like, I haven't really been playing many games. Mm-hmm. So, but I am, it's, we're only what, a week and a half away roughly from Hellblade 2, 21st.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm kind of living for that. I'm just going to get lost in that game. I'm probably one of those ones I'll start it again the minute I finish it, kind of thing. Yeah. You know. What have you been kind of playing and watching yourself?
I haven't been playing that much. I tried the new Fallout 4, the next gen update.
Is it fully working or not?
No.
Right.
It crashed two or three times, and it actually ended up where I was in shopping mall somewhere and something happened with, like, I got annihilated by ghouls because I forgot with that game you could have, even if I think I was playing it on easy, and it's still, if you don't plan accordingly, you walk in somewhere with three fucking bullets and you're just fucking annihilated. But I was trying to reload my save, but it was either reload 2 seconds earlier and die again, or one of my saves was gone. So it was go back to just when you came out of the vault, but 2.5 hours earlier. It's like, and where are all the auto saves? Like, where?
Right. Okay.
So that might have put an end to my playthrough of that very quickly. Which is a shame because I was, because I don't even think I finished that game. Maybe I probably played maybe about 6 or 7 hours of it when it came out. I think I loved it, but fell off it pretty quickly. But it's a shame. I'll see if there's a patch or something I can do to fix it. But I wasn't playing that much because I was trying to play Top Spin 2K25, and this again is doing my fucking nutted. Like, this is a rant episode. Trying to play it like it's the new fantastic tennis game, the sequel to the 2011 legendary Top Spin 4. But man, I couldn't play it at any stage all fucking week because the servers are down. And like you'd think, you know, the servers are down, which means you can't play online like FIFA or something like that. But it's not. It works. It's like when their servers go down, then specific aspects of the game are inaccessible. And as I say, you would think that's just multiplayer game, but I go in and all you can play is like training or exhibition mode, like my career mode. The single player mode is offline because their servers are down. It's another example of this fucking bullshit always online
games
that where people go mad that like you can't play single player games because their servers are down, and you know that the backlash from fans has fallen on deaf ears because it has to be online because they have to sell you stuff through the in-game kind of, you know, stores and microtransactions and stuff like that. They even said that the servers will be shut down for this game, you know, at the end of 2026 or something. And it's just like, it's a ticking time on the game. It's just like, I played 80 quid for this fucking game. I built my character, just trying to play it just for a few games all week, and I can't play it because their servers are down. It's just, I got back onto Twitter, which I haven't been on in about 4 years. Just to fucking rant at them. Like, sort it out, man. Fuck's sake. So I haven't been playing too much from a few hours of Fallout. But what I was watching, and this is great, it's not a show or a movie or anything, but it was an episode of something called The Corridor Crew, which I follow on YouTube. And they're a bunch of VFX artist guys that do a lot of cool stuff. And it's, millions of views and all this stuff. But they have one show like every week where they look at good and bad CGI for movies. And this one was looking at the Barbie movie. And I was curious. And it was the negative VFX in the Barbie movie. And I was thinking, I'm pretty sure that that movie looks fucking great. But it was not the movie they were looking at. But they were commenting that there's a 45-minute behind-the-scenes content on the DVD where they've where they've covered up all the blue screen behind-the-scenes shots and replaced it with bad, CGI set shots to just keep this whole narrative of there's no CGI in the movie going, which is just like...
Oh, okay.
Which is a bit ridiculous. Yeah, it was a bit fucking crazy. And like the VFX team on the movie said like that, you know, there's 2,000 shots in the movie and 1,500 of visual effects. But the directors, there's a whole thing about it. Like Barbie, it's practical. It's in fucking, you know, it's shot in camera. But that Barbie section was actually taken from, and this is the real part I'm trying to push to people to watch. It's a 4-part series from... this guy, Jonas, who set up the movie Rabbit Hole. And it's just a 4-part series of like 20 minutes each. And it's called No CGI is Just Invisible CGI, which is fucking great. And he's a VFX artist with like 18 years of experience. And he's saying that there's so much no CGI in movies today. Where people are just, everyone just loves, you know, there's this whole backlash. Like, oh, CGI madness. And everyone looks practical and just... It's obviously if it can be done in camera, that's all well and good. But it seems to be very important for studios to let you know they use no CGI. No CGI, guys. And he talks about the fabricated war between practical effects and CGI that was seemingly invented by the audience because like practical departments and miniature departments and VFX departments and movies actually all work together because somebody builds a miniature and then people create a visual effect, you know, of that, but they use the lighting and the movement from the miniature to inform the VFX and all this kind of shit. But he does a great bit on Top Gun, where Top Gun Maverick, you remember the whole thing was like, we did this, we're in the jets, man, it's all in the jets, and he breaks it down. And the amount of visual effects in Top Gun is astonishing. Like at some point, it's just the pilot's head, and it's like they fly around in like just gray, just standard kind of jets with all tracking markers on them because all the planes in the movies are either decommissioned or don't work anymore, or you're not allowed to fly. So in like this in any given shot, there could just be Tom Cruise's head and his hands and the rest in the cockpit, and everything else is CGI. And some of the aerial shots, it's all CGI. The planes were there, but they've comped over them with all these bits. But it's great when they just kind of go, yeah, we did it all in camera. And it's just like, yeah, but you were nominated for an Oscar for your visual effects, and there's 400 people. There's 400 people under visual effects credited in the fucking movie credits.
It's a fucking great movie, though.
Oh, it's fantastic. But it's just, yeah, he's just touching on it. It's just, and there's loads more movies goes into it. It's really worth a watch for anyone who's just interested in seeing the whole how they do visual effects in movies, but also this whole narrative of CGI is bad, you know, and the audience just jump on this. We're like, oh, that's CGI nonsense. Like everything is CGI. Like fucking,
yeah, like, I mean,
TV shows.
I love practical effects because I know and I've seen the amount of work that goes into them. It's just something I've always loved because when I was younger, all the movies I loved, most of them were using practical effects, and I love that look, you know, but just because I love that doesn't mean I don't want CGI. If it wasn't for CGI, this movie we're about to talk to wouldn't exist. You know what I mean? It probably could. It'll look like the ones from the fucking 70s or whatever, but it wouldn't have the scenes that we see in this without it. You know what I mean? It's impossible to get away from. When used properly, CGI is amazing, I guess. Some people don't like it because once it started to be more readily available, it became cheaper. It's a lot cheaper than for studios to be able to use this stuff. When CGI first happened, it was expensive technology to use and to software to use. Whereas now you can watch a sci-fi movie, you know, these movies that are made for fucking less than $1 million, you know, and they've got full on CGI in them, you know, and it's because it's so available. And that's where I suppose people might have got their issue by, it looks fucking bad, I don't want it. Whereas, it enhances so much that.
Yeah. And it's just the people being uninformed about what actually happens in TVs and movies in terms of CGI. They think CGI and they just think, oh, fucking Marvel or fucking, you know, something overblown cartoony stuff, but it's, you know, fucking Law and Order, you know, episodes of that. Do you think they're shutting down a fucking avenue in New York to do a scene? No, it's just a big giant blue screen in the background. They put the little things like David Fincher, when you look at any breakdown of his scenes, he doesn't like the way a tree looks in the background. He's like, fucking get me a new tree. You know, it's just, he changes the grass and stuff. There's so much stuff. And as you were saying, like the old movies, and so much stuff was done practically. But even then, the amount of visual effects, the amount of, like matte paintings and stuff.
I love the one at the end of Die Hard 2, you know, with the planes all outside and the thing. Because even then it looked fake, you know, even when it was made, it looked fake. Yeah. But like, because I watch every Christmas, I watch Die Hard 1 and 2. And I'm always just, the end of it, just like, oh, it's so ridiculous. Whereas when I was younger, and even now to an extent, watching Star Wars, you know, and like you've got the fucking, the shuttle coming into the bay and stuff, and
that's all in matte painting.
All the stormtroopers are all lined up, and all those stormtroopers are all individually painted. You know, it's all in matte. But that still looks fucking incredible. And my mind was blown watching that when I was younger. Holy shit! How did they do that? You know,
because it's multi-layered. Like, but all those matte paintings go back to like the first recorded one is like back in 1905 or something like that. It's just it's always been a part. It's the marriage of practical stuff and visual effects to do what you can't do, or to just adjust it, and they both work together in unison to create brilliant cinema. And it's good to chat about visual effects and the history of them and how great they've got, because it does play a massive part in the movie we will be reviewing this week. But before that, what have you been up to yourself, watching and playing anything cool?
Well, like I said, I haven't really been playing anything. I mean, I will admit the other day, I think I did 4 hours of playing Marvel Snap. The addiction continues. But the watching, I watched a couple of cool things. The roast of Tom Brady. This is not geeky. I just wanted to shout it out. It's on Netflix, and it's like fucking 3 hours long. But like huge stars on it as well. Like fucking Will Ferrell comes out as Ron Burgundy, fucking Ben Affleck. There's all celebrities all in the fucking crowd as well. Like it's just, I think that Netflix did a live stream of it. This is the recording of it. Like a Kevin Hart is doing the MC of it. But like it's so vicious. Like it'd probably mean more to you because you're an American football fan, whereas for me, I know Tom Brady is. I know a few of the names, you know. But like they had Bill Belichick come out, and he did. He was roasting Tom Brady and roasting some of the people. It's definitely worth the watch. Like some of the burns in it, even if you're not, are fucking hilarious. It's really good. The other thing is, and this one is still in Irish cinemas. If people want to go and see it, is a horror movie called Abigail.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
I absolutely loved this. I thought it was fantastic. It's like it's real. It's horror, but dark comedy horror. And like the cast is ridiculous. Like it's Dan Stevens, Giancarlo Esposito, Kevin Durand, Melissa Barrera, who's in the Scream movies, Catherine Newton, who was in the Quantumania. Like it's just class, and there's a really cool cameo towards the end as well. But it's so gory, but so funny. Then again, there's another like really good kid actor as well who's playing Abigail. I don't know the actress's name, but she's fantastic. But they all know what movie they're in. You know, I mean, they're all having fun with it.
Cool.
And it's great fun. Like, the jokes are spot on. It's just when the blood and stuff happens, it's fucking overdone. Like it's everywhere. The gore, you know, it's just I really enjoyed it. It's a fun time. And if people are looking for into their kind of comedy, kind of horror, that's it. That's all I want. That's all I've kind of been into the last week. But yeah, I do recommend that one. Check out Abigail.
Okay, so with that out of the way, we will get on to our movie review this week, which is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Over to you, Philly.
Cheers, Daz. Yes, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is the one we're doing this week. And happy to say it's another one that we both enjoyed. For those of you who are new, what we do is our usual long reviews, our discussions. They're very spoiler heavy. We get right into what we enjoyed, what we didn't, but we're talking about specific plot points. So you're warned. But at the start, what we'll do is we'll talk about what our general feelings are, you know, about it, and we'll... If you want to bail out then and say no, that's fucking that's too much for me and save it, that's fair enough. Come back and see if we're spot on afterwards. But it's basically, this one is set many years after Caesar, who was the main ape from the original trilogy. And he goes on a journey that'll lead him to question everything he's been taught about the past and make choices that will define a future for humans and apes alike. Daz, I don't know about you, but I wasn't totally hyped for this because I loved the first three so much. Like Matt Reeves's two in particular were fantastic. Like, it ends so, like at the end of the third one, it's heartbreaking. It's beautifully done. You know, even I heard they were all just in mocap suits, and when they were doing that recording, Andy Serkis, and I can't remember the name of the female actor who was playing Maurice, but the whole cast and crew were bawling and everything. You know, it was just it's an excellent ending to the trilogy. And so when they said they were making another one, I was a little bit concerned, but I was pleasantly surprised. What about you, Daz?
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't even, like, after the last one, I didn't even expect another one. You know, I just thought, that's it. You've successfully finalized and created one of the best fucking trilogies ever. It was just, it's fantastic. But yeah, when this one came out, I remember when the first trailer came out, and I think we saw it in IMAX, and it was like, okay, and it's... kind of looks okay. It's ticking all the boxes. It looks amazing. There's apes, action and all this kind of stuff. But and after seeing the movie, and we said this last night, that I wonder, was it because the trailer doesn't quite give you that much in terms of the way the movie goes, in terms of the female character, and terms of kind of maybe the last act, which is the way trailers were a long time ago. But the trailer just went, okay, I'll see it, but I'm not kind of going, oh, I wonder what they're going to do next. And I really, really enjoyed it. I was, definitely skeptical going in, wondering what they do and how they tie it to Caesar. I thought visual effects were astounding as usual. The use of water, the bold use of water on fur for large portions of the end of the movie looked fucking amazing. There wasn't as much action as previous installments, but I think that's a good thing. They had lovely themes about, how the victor writes history. There's kind of cultural ape feuds and stuff like that. And I thought it was really good. Negative-wise, I mean, I think it took a little bit of time to get going, but that was necessary. But it did kind of plot it a little bit for the first, 15, 20 minutes. But that character development pays off beautifully later on in the film. But it seemed lacking a little urgency in the early moments. And I think that sometimes if a movie knows it's going to be part of a trilogy, they're not really in any urgency to get to specific plot points because... spoiler, it's left on a kind of a, not so much a cliffhanger, but it's setting up something else.
It feels like a setup. Yeah, it does feel like a setup movie.
That they're expecting the next one to happen.
And we'll talk to more about the negatives when we get into it, because I don't want to spoil it for anybody who wants to skip on. But it is definitely one that I recommend. It's doing quite well in the cinema. It was made for $160 million, and so far it's worldwide has made $129 million.
Nice, so, that's good.
So that's fantastic. It's only out. It's only just out. So it'll, I imagine we will be seeing the sequels for it. So there obviously is still a hunger for people to go and see these movies, which is great. I suppose the other thing then is that you're probably happy about that this is a good movie, Daz, is that the director is the same director who's going to be directing our Zelda live action movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is
so that was kind of a relief.
Brilliant. And he knows what he's fucking doing.
Because there was a little bit of a Jesus, the Scorch Trials guy. Fuck,
what's going on there?
Maybe is this an audition for it? Let's see what you can do, because it's great. But the as we've talked about with the CG and the worlds that can be made, like we're watching this. I love it, like you do, that aesthetic of miles in the future, our old cities and stuff have been reclaimed by the forest overgrowth. And it's just big buildings that are all crumbled, and there's just trees fucking growing everywhere. And like I said to you, I it really made me want to play a Horizon game after it. It's it looks gorgeous for that. But look, we're going to get into the spoiler stuff now, but we do both recommend the movie if you want to go absolutely check it out.
Yeah, it's great.
So into the discussion about it, like as I said, it's directed by Wes Ball and written by Josh Friedman. He was a writer on War of the Worlds, Avatar: The Way of Water, Terminator. What was that called?
Good Dark resume. Fate.
Yeah, decent. Yeah. I mean, Dark Fate is if you took out Schwarzenegger out of it, like it's not that bad of a movie. Like, what's her face is really cool. Mackenzie Bollocks, what's her name?
Oh yeah, she's brilliant, talking about,
right? Yeah, like she's really good in it. Like it's. We're not going to fucking talk about Terminator. So basically, yeah, this movie, it's set generations after the last movie, and at the start of it, we kind of get a flashback from at Caesar's funeral. But just before that, as the titles come up, they basically give you a little bit of exposition, a little bit of story about what's happened. And it's saying that the virus that had been released that made all the apes get, you know, smarter and smarter, also made all the humans get less and less intelligent to the point where some are non-verbal. And so if you've ever watched the original Planet of the Apes movies, then you will have seen that, like when the Charlton Heston comes down and he's wondering why the apes are in charge and why none of the humans are able to talk and stuff like that. So it's playing on that a little bit. And there's a fair few nods to the originals as well. But yeah, after we've got our little flashback at a funeral, we get into the future and we see our kind of main, I suppose he's our main guy, isn't he? Noah. So he's there with his two friends, and they have kind of like a trial where they have to climb up to get an eagle egg each. Eagles play a big part in this fucking movie.
The eagle clan, right?
Clan, and so they've it's fucking awesome. I mean, who doesn't like eagles?
I'd like to see where maybe it'll come in the future movies, but what have other clans done? You know, what have they adapted into their clan? Because it's pretty fucking cool, just apes and eagles, like as a little premise.
Yeah, the idea is that they have to go up. They all take an egg each, and the idea is that they have a ceremony where they, you know, they raise their, they get the imprint, I suppose the first imprint on this fucking creature, and they, you know, they raise them or whatever. But I loved the scene. This is the CGI and stuff, like the climbing, like he has this one part where he jumps and uses a pole to stab it into the wall to make it up to the nest to get the egg. And I love the CGI here, and the three of them, very distinct personalities between the three. I think it was what's the name? It was Asuma, and I can't remember. I should have written it down. The other guy's name,
Anion. Big Anion. Part. Comes back in
there. Anion. Yeah. Yeah. And it's cool. Like they, because they're smart, obviously, and they're still, you know, they're speaking to each other, but they do still have that bits of sign language that's the way that they've evolved in the other movies. You know, it started off, a lot of them were just signing and then talking and using little bits of words and stuff. And they still do. They're still as they're talking, and sometimes they just use sign. Which I thought that was really, really cool, to show that even the generations have gone on, you know, that it's kept through the generations, that's how they'll still communicate, that everybody signs, you know, or at least that everybody in their clan. Like. Yeah. I suppose this is kind of, it's on their way back from getting their egg that we kind of come, I suppose we see our first glimpse of a human. So the main human in this is a character called, well, she starts off as being called Nova, and played by Freya Allen, who people might know from the Witcher series. So she comes up and she gets it, robs it. They come back to their horses, and there's a blanket missing. And when they follow it down, they find out, you know, it's that she has nicked it and ran off with it. But it's, yeah, like it's really, again, it's really cool. The village and stuff that they all live in is so different from the other clans. So as you said, I would love to see, you know, what has happened, because that what we saw at the end of the last movie was Caesar had brought the apes together. They wanted to be better than humans, and they didn't want to use violence. That fight with Koba and stuff, you know, he wanted to use violence. Caesar's like, no, you know, it's apes, don't hurt apes. But obviously as it's gone on, they've what's happened to them is just what happened to humans. You know, people split off into different factions and different cities, and you know, it's a great little insight into how their societies kind of change and stuff. How did you feel about the pacing? Because this is the start, you know, as we come back into the village. When you were saying that it was a bit slow, was it this part? Do you think this dragged on for you? Or
well, it's weird because I was thinking about it. It's not like I hate when people say a movie got slow, or you know, it's almost like there's not enough action in it. Like I love character development and I love slow sections, so to speak, but I just felt that it was necessary, but I just felt it needed an injection of something, a bit of pace, something to happen. But then you do need that time to set up these characters and to introduce the village and even the dynamic with his father. As much as I'm saying that it needed an injection of pace, I almost felt like we didn't get enough with him and his father we'll get on to, you know, what happened to his father a little bit later on. But they have kind of one little exchange, you know, and I love the way he's terrified of letting down his father, and the fact that he says, like, his father is, was it the master of birds or something, and you're just going, that's just a fucking cool title. This is really cool. That kind of, there was bits of it that were very interesting, but I just think maybe if there was, more a bit like just maybe something about another clan or something like that, because when they go off, or when, like, we'll get to it when he goes off later on to get his replacement egg or something, then it really kind of kicks into gear very, very quickly. It just kind of shifts from third gear to fucking sixth gear. It's just like, whoa, fucking hell.
Yeah, because they've got the blanket, you know, that's covered, it's got blood or whatever on, they bring it back to kind of to show the council, because there's a council of apes, obviously, and the elders or whatever. And they're like, oh, fucking, this is outsiders, this is, you know, whatever. Yeah, we're going to have to send a team out to try and find it. And so a team head out to try and find the human or whoever it is that has this. And at nighttime then, because Freya Allen is the human, she has followed our guy Noah in, and he finds her in their camp, tries to chase her, and he breaks the egg, because the idea is they have to keep the egg on them, and he breaks it by accident. And so he knows he's going to be fucking cocked up and miss the ceremony, so he decides to sneak out at night to get a new egg. And when he goes out at night on his horse, he finds that the squad that had been sent out are all, they're all dead apart from one guy who's just about to die, and he's like, there's more coming, and then he just dies with like a knife in his back. And then we see the other ape tribe come in, and these are different from the guys we've seen. Like, we've seen very basic wooden shacks, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
These guys riding in horses, they've got sticks that are like cattle prods that are run on like battery power cattle. So, well, you know, how the fuck did they get these things? And these are obviously the bad apes.
The bad apples.
And they're clever enough to use what they have. They find Noah's horse there, so they realize that there is obviously another camp nearby. And so they give that horse a prod, and they go, well, look, it's going to run home, so let's follow it. So they fucking leg it off back to they follow it back to the village, and Noah has no horse now. So by the time he gets back to the village, it's been destroyed. It's fucking, it's really sad. Like, it's go back, you can just see the place is on fucking fire. The gorillas are, the other apes, and led by a big gorilla dude, are fucking shocking them and all the rest of it. And it is sad, because we've seen that kind of how close he is to his mother and to his father. And to see his father getting killed like that, you know, and then he just falls down. Like, it's a big, huge fucking battle. The whole thing is up in flames, and he's hanging on by a rope, and the gorilla kind of breaks the rope, and you just see our guy Noah fall down into the rubble or whatever. And obviously we know he's not dead, but he wakes up shortly after, and everything is in bits, and finds his father's body. And that was really tough. You know, I thought that was really sad, that part. They played it well. You know,
it's our first look at the tearful eyes of these, the CGI powerful, tearful eyes at work, and it's just it's amazing. And like, remember that was the moment where you're still wondering why and how the Academy don't have an Oscar category for performing arts or something for motion capture, because this, like, the way he's just looking at his father and kind of reaches out just to touch his cheek and just looking at him, and it's just straight away you're going, this is the best acting I've seen all year. Like, that's a fucking like 20 year old ape or something. It's just like, oh my god. But it's it's heart-wrenching, and that's a good sign of a movie, like when they can do that so early, they can tug at the heartstrings. I remember like Guardians of the Galaxy, when it's like 5 minutes in and he sees his mother dying and cancer, and it's 5 minutes in and he's like, hold my hand, Peter, and I'm fucking bawling in the cinema. Just like, I just got in. This is supposed to be a movie about a fucking like talking raccoon. I'm bawling my eyes out. Yeah. But that reminded me of this, where you're just kind of going, oh, that is, it's a very, very emotional moment based on a scene or two with the two of them together, which is very powerful, very powerful.
And I think this is kind of the part where as well he realizes that there's not, you know, not everyone is there's not enough dead bodies there. So people are, you know, some people have been taken away, and he realizes that they've obviously been taken by this other clan. So he decides to write fucking horse up and go and find them. So he goes off to this forbidden zone they're never supposed to go. And he's like, I'm going to have to go and try and find the hostages. And this is where I love this part. So this is where I love this character. As he's walking through, he's in this area. He falls through a roof, and the roof that he's standing on collapses, and he falls down into it. And we meet this character, Raka. It was an orangutan. And I love this. Peter Macon is playing. You people might know him from Orville and stuff like that, but he plays the character here, and I really liked him, man. There's a great humor, and they've put some such wonderful expression into his face. Like when he's talking to Nova later on, the wonder, you know, that's coming up in his eyes and his face when he wants to know all about the old world, and he's one of the few people who still follows the traditions that Caesar wanted. Ape, don't hurt ape, apes together strong. Yeah. You know, I love this character. What did you think?
Oh, it's just like their relationship is the heart of the movie, pretty much. And it's exactly what was needed at this point in the movie. And I think because he's almost one half of this remembering Caesar's history. Or this is the positive side, where he's remembering all his teachings and what he actually meant by apes together strong and bringing apes together. But he's also seemingly disillusioned a little bit, where he's just like, thinks that, you know, Caesar, like, almost like allowed humans to live together or something like that. He puts him up on like totally on a massive pedestal, where on the other side, you've got, you know, when we get to Proxima, it's the opposite, where he just uses it for his own gain. But he's a wonderful character. Like the, like, again, it's just the eyes, the expressions, and like, I can't overestimate the amazing visuals on an IMAX screen. Myself and Phil are front row fuckers. Like, so it's just, they're just the close-ups are just unbelievable. Like the eyeballs are bigger than our seats, you know, when we're watching it. It's just like the visual effects can't hide when you're front row IMAX. And it's just, he blew me away. Really touching character.
He's a great character, and it was great to kind of see, as you said, that he has this grandiose view. He almost, that the Caesar and other apes kept humans as pets, almost. You know, they allowed them to live with them, all this kind of stuff. But when he's explaining the history, he also explains, because Noah has heard the bad guy apes, the other clan, shouting the name of Caesar when they fucking come to kill all his people. So he's like, who is this fucking dickhead? He sounds awful. And Raka explains to him, no, this other guy has taken his name, and he's called Proximus Caesar, and he basically distorts the word, and it distorts the word of him. And it's like anything now, it's like anybody who's, people who are religious will often talk about how some people distort what, you know, the meaning of what their God actually said wanted. You know, no, he didn't, when he said that, he didn't mean this, when he said that, he didn't mean this. You know, it just shows
you've interpreted it completely.
Generations and generations can be interpreted, because these apes aren't recording history the way you know, we are, so they're bound to go and just the same mistakes make that the humans made. But he explains the history, and he says he's going to he explains the fact that he's been followed by, there's a human following him, and he says, well, I'm going to go on this journey with you to find out if there's more knowledge out there, because he's shown him that he has these books. He's like, look at the books, there's knowledge held, but he's about the previous world. And so the human following them, as we said, is Freya Allen. And they're around the campfire, and it's really nice, this scene does. As I've mentioned, I will mention multiple times throughout this, the lighting effects in this are outrageous. Like, they're sitting around the campfire, to have that on, like you said, all on the CGI, on the fur, everything like that, but to have it so consistent, because, you know, Freya Allen is in the scene, so she's just sitting away from them, and she's watching them as they're sitting around at their campfire, and they throw her some food and they throw her a blanket and stuff, but it's so incredibly consistent. You know, there's not, the lighting doesn't change where you're kind of going, okay, well, I can see it's, you know, that part isn't that. It's so consistent that you completely, you don't, as you said, you don't spot it. I mean, I know it's not real, but it's so well done. I love that. It's a common theme throughout the movie. The lighting is done so incredibly well.
And we touched on that last night as well afterwards. We were saying that, like, you end up commenting on things about the movie that you would about any film. You're not saying, Jesus Christ, did you see the visual effects on the fur or whatever? After a few moments in the movie, you're now commenting on the filmmaking. You're going, like, there's one shot when he goes out to get the egg or whatever, and it's just a wide establishing shot, and it's just the top of moonlit, kind of ravine, fucking forest, and some apes or whatever, and it's just, you're just marveling at the shot and the cinematography and the composition. It's not, wow, look at the effects, as you're saying. You're just looking at the shot going, the lighting in this shot is gorgeous, amazing. But then you're going, yeah, there's also two apes in it. You know, it's just like,
she's the feral one, like, they're saying, you know, that she's, like, as you said, nonverbal and stuff. They're like, let's just bring her. She keeps following us, you know, and she's, let's bring her with us. And so she jumps on horseback with it or two, and they go off. And as far as they know, she's mute, you know. Yeah. And it's mad because they come across the other humans, and we see what was referred to as the real, let's just call them dummies. You know, they're humans that are just, they're just wearing rags. They travel in herds like animals. Like, they're thick as shit. This is like a herd of Marjorie Taylor Greens, you know, only less off-putting. Like, it just gross looking. You see it going, oh, right, okay. And that's what they're talking about, how the people, humans, have devolved. But Caesar says, look, well, this is as far as, you know, I need to go off and do my thing on my horse. This is where we part ways. And Caesar has just headed off when the bad apes show up. Noah has just headed off to go and find bad Caesar and find all his people. And just then the bad apes show up and they're there to round up humans. So again, it's very similar to the original movies. Like, they have on horseback and they have nets, and they're using the nets to catch them. And there's this scene from the trailer that's in it. And I love this. Like, so she's on her hands and knees and she's trying to crawl away from them. And we get that overhead shot of the gorillas moving through the tall grass, trying to find her. It's like the velociraptors, you know, in the Lost World. And yeah, it's cool. And fucking, they're going to catch her, and he's on horseback, and she looks up through the grass and she can see him, and she just jumps up. She just screams his name. So they haven't heard her say a word, but she screams Noah, and he sees her. And of course the apes hear as well. So they start fucking chasing after her. At the same time, he's running on his horse, and she jumps and he catches her. And it's just, it's really cool. It's a really cool little scene and a really cool escape.
And that big guy, who is the, you think he's the main big bad, but it turns out he's just like the first.
He's the lieutenant
of the big bad later on. But he's fucking just a ginormous, scary motherfucking gorilla.
He's a gorilla.
When he's tearing after her, and you see it in the trailer, but it's still, when you see the whole scene in total, it works so much better. Where she's just tearing away, like, to run to try and jump on the horse with him, and this fucking guy is just tearing behind her.
Yeah. And, and you feel it.
The sound design and the thuds is just
You feel the weight. Like, you know, I think it was actually, I think it was actually Jenny years ago, we were talking about the Transformers movie, and she was saying one of the hardest parts of doing that stuff, bringing CGI animation on screen, is to make it look like it has weight to it, you know, that it's not just superimposed over the background. And you, with the sound in this, it, you really feel them pounding on that, on the ground, tearing after, you know, and he's coming in on the horse.
You feel like they are 2-ton gorillas. It's like, it's like that first Spider-Man, Sam Raimi Spider-Man, where the visual effects are great, but he just looks like he's floating around when he's jumping. It just doesn't feel like he's has the proper weight of a person. But and this, it's fucking, it's fantastic. Really fantastic.
Yeah, it's class. And they, so anyway, they end up, it's that's the part from the trailer. They end up, Raka shows up then as well on his horse, and they go and escape. And of course, then they're amazed that not only can she, he's like, she fucking shouted my name. He's like, no, you obviously misheard her. And then she does, you know, she speaks up, and they're amazed. And I suppose this is one of the kind of parts I found to be a little bit of an, maybe more that I just didn't understand it, is that not only can she speak, she's one of the humans that can speak. Mm. She speaks incredibly fluently, perfect. Mm. You know, so they're talking about humans that can speak are supposedly, you know, like unicorns. You know, people, it's a myth. Some people see it. Some people are talking, like, are convinced they were smart at one point. But she speaks better English than all of the apes.
Yeah.
So, like, for her to speak that well, surely she's speaking often and speaking with many, many other people who can speak as well. I would have thought it would have been better to have her and have been a little bit more, like, have language if you want, but make it a little bit more primitive, because she sounds no different than any young American girl, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Her vocabulary is pretty adept for, you know, 300 years in the future. But it, like, and it's touched on, you know, obviously touched on later on when there are other humans in the movie, but it's like she is kind of a messenger or something. She's kind of a nomad that kind of wanders around doing missions for people or something, but it's not like she lives with other humans. We'll get onto that kind of later on. But
I mean, we do, obviously, and there is a bunch of humans, and I get that. It's just that we're talking about generations and generations and generations. So we do see, and we'll get to all that when we see the other humans later on that are thing, and they're all seem to be, you know, well capable and talking and technologically wise and all the rest of it. But it's just like, how have hundreds of years gone by and we're only seeing they're only a myth that people are talking about? How did you manage to hide for hundreds of years where, you know, the thick humans are out there and everybody can see them and catch them and put them to work or do whatever with them, but the smart humans have managed to keep it? Just, I don't know, it seemed a bit weird. Maybe I'm thinking too much into it probably. But anyway, we end up with a quite a sad part, because they come to a bridge, and, you know, apes and monkeys can't swim, and they're coming across a bridge, and so the two lads, obviously Raka and Noah, are a bit hesitant, but they start to make their way across with May, and next thing they're surrounded on all sides by the bad guys. Bad apes show up, and Raka saves May's life because she falls into the water and she's hanging on by a net and he has to climb down to get her. But then when he throws her up, he ends up getting caught. And the man, this fucking broke my heart. Like, he just he just says to Noah, like, apes together, strong. And then he gets and he just gets taken away by the water. And I'm just like, I know he's not coming back because we know they can't swim. He's just, and it's just, that was a fucking heartbreaking.
There's such weight to it. Like, you know,
It's
just such, obviously this is kind of a slight comedic element to it as well, but it's a very touching relationship, and the three of them had developed, you know, kind of a nice little bond. And I thought maybe he would maybe be killed off a bit later on in the movie, but the minute the bridge arrived in the water, you're just like, well, someone's fucking dying here. It was so sad. It's just apes to get as strong. It fucking gets you every time. It's just fantastic. Say that at somebody's wedding and people start crying.
Well, we are all apes, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're captured after they, you know, from on the bridge. Noah and May are captured and they're brought to the bad apes camp, as you said, where Proximus is the main man. And when they get there, he realizes that this is where they've got all his friends, his mother is still alive, his friends are still alive, but they're all basically being kept as to work as slaves for Proximus. And he's got this basically like, it's like a fort right on the coast. And there's this big, huge fucking bad, massive door for like a vault that they're trying to open. And so they get separated from each other, and May gets brought in to this room, and then we meet Trevithan, played by William H. Macy. So another intelligent human, and he seems to be working, I suppose, for the apes. I say with the apes, he's working for the apes. And yeah, I suppose it was the fact that she's not overly shocked that he's there. You know, and she's not like, oh my God, another talking human. I was like, okay, we're obviously going to be seeing more of these people. So, but he's the one who fills in some blanks. He's obviously the one who helped them to build those shock sticks. Mm. And he's telling them how they're going to be able to blow open these doors, because Proximus Caesar is sure that there's secrets inside and things they'll be able to use from the old world. And it's Kevin Durand, who I'm delighted that he's playing this role. I think I love him. He's never the leading man, you know, but he's always in some really cool sci-fi and horror stuff. Big imposing dude, but always he can be menacing, but he can also be the big lovable giant as well. So I was delighted to have him for him playing this role.
Yeah, he eats up the fucking screen when he's on it. Like, he's so imposing, and he gets some great monologues. And when we get to later on, the dinner scene is one of my favorite scenes in the movie. He's wonderful. And again, it's just the animation of him, you know, the close-ups. Yeah. And it's just, he's just so menacing, but so, such a tyrant. You know what I mean? Just believes his own bullshit. And the fact that he, as we were saying, he uses Caesar's legacy and twists his meaning of apes together strong to enslave people in this camp to do his will and his bidding, which is just, I loved that kind of dichotomy of how Caesar's legacy is told or told to.
It's been bastardized.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah. He's standing there talking. He does say apes together are strong, but he means apes together are strong working for me, you know, I say, everything's fine. Yeah. But it's everything he has. They're all almost hypnotically chanting everything he says after he says it. Like, he's obviously got a hold over them. Like, he's the latest Caesar. Mm-hmm. I agree. I thought he was fantastic. You know, I suppose, actually, if you want to, because before we get, if you want to talk about the dinner scene, because that's kind of come up where he's talking about how he wants to build an ape kingdom to wipe out the smart human threat.
Yeah, but it's a scene that kind of takes its time a good bit, and the fact that they're all just sitting around, and it's kind of a three-way scene between Proximus, May, and Noah. Noah's mostly just kind of watching on, but. And Proximus is telling of, like, how he needs what's in the vault or the behind the door, and his grandeur, and he's so imposing. And I always thought throughout that his intonation and how he speaks almost reminds you like of Agent Smith or something like that. So irregular, his pronunciation and his breath and stuff. It's just fucking captivating. But that was just. Fantastic and standout scene for sure. And again, as you said, it's so seamless. It's so believable. It's so consistent visually. It's fucking wonderful.
Yeah, it's quality. Yeah. I like it. And it's like May understands that she understands what he wants, and she wants what's in there as well. You know, she knows there's something in there that's of importance. And she says to Noah, look, I know, you know, I lied to you about being able to speak and knowing where the vault is and stuff, but like, I need your help. There's something in the vault that might be able to help us bring the power of speech stuff back to humans.
That was the most intriguing part of it, because straight away it's you're thinking like, is it like, he doesn't know what's in there. So is it, you're thinking straight away it's weaponry or something that it's going to, you know, turn the tide and really like, change the evolution of these apes? Are they going to get weapons or information or something? But then when she says that, like, it'll allow us to allow, it'll bring humans on the path to being back to being intelligent and speak and stuff like that, that straight away I was going, what the fuck is that like? Like, what is it that can do that, that the apes shouldn't have?
Well, yeah, and so I don't, because we said, as I said at the start and from the original movies, it was a virus that was spread. So I don't know what it is that's going to do, but that's that. I agree with you. It became so intriguing, and it sets up one of the wonderfully complicated relationship then between May and Noah at the end. You know, I think that you know, of what each other's motives and stuff are. And I think, yeah, you're right. It just became that straight away of, okay, hang on, what, where is this going to go? And that, it makes me incredibly interested for the next movie. But he goes and asks Suna and Anayan to come and help. So because obviously, you know, Freya can't climb. I don't know how she says there's an entrance at the top of the cliff.
Yeah.
I don't know how she knows that, because she can't climb without their help.
Yeah.
But anyway, before they get there, William H. Macy shows up and starts telling, and she starts telling him he's a fucking traitor and all this shit. And she ends up having to, he's gonna go off and rat on them that they're trying to blow the place up. They've rigged basically the whole place on the outside to blow up. But the, like, it's the standoff between the two of them, and the apes that we see, Noah and his friends, they don't commit violence against each other. So she jumps on, and she's holding William H. Macy in a fucking, you know, a headlock from behind. She's choking him to death, and we cut to her face, and she's obviously, you know, it's paining her to kill her. You can see the pain in her face, but the look of shock on the three apes' face, because they don't know what this is. They don't fight each other. They don't commit violence against each other. So just to see it, they're just looked at, you know, disgust. And
it's a fucking brilliant shot.
Overhead
shot when she has him on the ground, and the camera just slowly just kind of is zooming in and zooming in until it's just her face, and he can't see him anymore, but he's obviously stopped.
She's just shaking because he's fucking thinking. Yeah.
And it just stays on her. You're watching it, and I was just going, just stay on her for another few seconds to just really fucking sell the moment, because you're just going, Jesus Christ, is she going to kill him, or, you know, what's going to happen? But you get that kind of shock of you watching her fucking kill him straight away in a single shot, and then it's doubled down when they cut over to the guys who are just like, what the fuck have you just done?
Yeah,
but obviously
supposed to be the animals, you know what I mean?
It's fucking, it's, and then it's just like, okay, we need to move, blah blah blah, and it's straight on, just like, yeah, it is, it's great they're just looking totally,
it's excellent, shocked, yeah. Like, but they climb the cliff anyway. The three apes help May, and the four of them end up going up. And when they get into the place, it's like this military bunker / research place. So it's got weaponry and all that kind of stuff. And there's like this fucking tanks and guns and shit. But when they get in there again, I'm going to talk about the lighting again. They're walking through, they go in, and they all light, because they don't have torches, torches. They all just have, you know, flame torches. They all dip their fucking wick things in, light them on fire. The lighting as they walk through this place, because now we're lighting whole scenes, we're lighting them next to her, holding them, like, it's, I'll forever be mind blown. With the skill when this stuff is done correctly. It just looks fucking so cool. You feel the vastness of the place, and obviously people haven't been there in, you know, hundreds of years. May seems to know where she's going. She kind of goes and she looks for a map and tells her what's on what floor. Yeah. And she makes her way to this room and she picks up this like SATCOM key thing. That's obviously what she's been trying to find. And she also, you see her open up a locker and it's full of guns. And as they're passing by, there's loads of tanks and shit.
Yeah.
But she, again, you know, there's obviously a lot of, she's obviously come across places like this before, because she knows when she goes into the room, the generator room, she's able to flick some switches, bang, hit it, and light the whole place up and bring electricity back. So she knows, again, you know, it's obviously there's been a load of intelligent humans around still. I just, why don't more people know about them, or why don't more apes know about them, is just, I don't know. I'm sure it'll be explained in the next movie. But anyway, after getting their bits and pieces, they make their way down and they open the big door, but they open it from the inside. So Proximus has been trying for ages with explosives and all sorts to open it, but they open it and all the bad guy apes are there. And yeah, like, this is, you know, this is must have been, this is where Noah and, you know, May have their kind of first big fucking like falling out thing, because she's like, I'm sorry, I have to do it. And she's running to hit the explosives to blow the dam, which is going to flood the whole place.
Yeah.
And while that might be great to stop the bad apes getting their hands on all the technology, it's also going to kill so many of his friends and family because they can't swim. There's not enough time for them all to get out. Now,
which is such a black and white decision where she's just like,
yeah,
they can't have this. They can't have the tanks and the weaponry and anything else that they may be able to use. And it's just straight away, she can't have that. I'm on a mission and this is my mission. It's very cutthroat, very bold. And yeah. I kind of like that from the character where you're like, fucking hell, she just killed the guy. She's actually fucking bad ass. Like the trailer makes it out where she's just the damsel in distress, or, you know, they don't really touch on any of this, which is a welcome surprise when she's pretty much badass character. And as you say, sets up a very kind of frosty relationship between the two because she just has her own agenda. And it's like, you know, thanks apes, but you know, you'll thank me. It's one of those, you'll thank me for this. They can't have the tanks and the weapons. That's it. And if some of your friends have to die and some of your family have to die, so be it. It's like, fucking hell, all right. Bitch.
That's it. She says, he asks her, no, you know, no, don't do it. And she just runs. She hits the fucking, puts the two wires together to create the spark. And the explosion goes up, the dam breaks, and all of a sudden water starts pouring in. So the girl's like, fucking hell. So obviously everybody freaks out. She actually just, sorry, I suppose just before she does that, one of the apes is coming to get her, and she pulls out a gun, and none of them know what is. She's holding a handgun, like a revolver, and they're all looking at her like, what the hell is this? And she shoots. And again, the noise goes up. They all go fucking,
what the fuck
like
is that? Yeah, and
again, they're not sure. But then the ape that's been shot looks down and he's got blood slowly trickling. He doesn't barely even understands what's happening, and he falls down dead. And that's when they back off her and she's able to run out and blow the place up. But the escaping again here, this is another part when you talked about the apes in the water.
It's amazing.
Because the place is flooding. So the apes try to get inside and they're trying to run up all the stairs, the sets of stairs inside to get up to safety from the rising water. And like that, it's incredible CGI again, but like that, the wet fur and the splashing, the camera gun just under the water and above it and everything. Mm. It's so well done. It's so well done.
Yeah, it's such a bold choice. Like, you know, we talk about visual effects and you know, like Pacific Rim or something like that, where when they have to do special effects, and if it's a really like a huge big scene where like a lot of shit is happening or a fight with robots and stuff, they tend to shoot it at nighttime, you know, to hide stuff. And this is the exact opposite of that, where it's like it's inside with kind of practical lighting that has to illuminate all the stuff that's reflecting off water, and you see it reflecting off their fucking eyeballs and stuff, the water and the light. And it's apes in kind of raging fucking water and the fur. And it's mind blowing. But it's so captivating as a scene that it's, you know, it's only kind of after the fact you go, Jesus, that was amazing visual effects at the time. It's just, it's frenetic. Like, really is.
Yeah.
It's crazy shit.
It looks so cool. And Noah here has a fight with the guy, as you said, the kind of lieutenant, second in command guy, the gorilla. He's having a fight with him, and the water's rising, but the two of them are battering each other, you know, in between all the racks and the pipes and everything else. And there's a gap that Noah is able to jump up and get through, but the gorilla can't. And it was actually difficult to watch his death. Like, he's reaching up to try and get it. Like, a human would just go, okay, deep breath, swim down and get out the other side. But he just can't. So he's just has to accept his fate. His hand is clawing up, trying to get at Caesar and trying to catch his last breath. But, you know, he just can't swim. He's just going to sink to the bottom and die. Despite being a bad guy, man, it was a difficult death.
Oh yeah, it was pretty tough. Yeah, tough to watch.
Anyway, they all get up to the this is the May has obviously done a legger at this point. But they get up to the top and they're up on this this outcrop. It's kind of where I assume it's the same part, isn't it? Where the apes had come in earlier on, the back door where they'd stuck in. And they get up there and there's kind of a showdown there. There's all the kind of slave apes and Proximus Caesar. And Proximus Caesar starts beating the shit out of him. Mm. And he's kind of just down and beaten. It's almost like fucking Black Panther style. You know, they're kind of everybody's around here and they're having this big fight just over the precipice. And then Nova starts doing this fucking chant. And then all the rest of the thing all start chanting. Fucking Proximus is looking around, realizing they've all turned on him. But they're all part of this Eagle clan. So I wasn't totally mad on this part. But
they kind of set it up a little bit beforehand when was it Rocka asks him to when they just met and he's talking about the Eagle tribe and stuff. And he says there's a song they sing for their initiation, and he asks him to sing it, and he says no. And you know, he's going to sing it at some point, you know, and that's when this happens. It's like a chant, and it's like a bit of foreshadowing. It's pretty cool in terms of, you know, what's coming, but then it's a bit cartoony a little bit at times.
It is, but I mean, like, why were the Eagles there? Why were they there? Like, I mean, they're doing the chant, and obviously this is the chant. They all have it. They all, as I said, they're like fucking Eagle whisperers. But the Eagles come in, and they know which gorilla person to attack, you know. So the Eagles all come in and they all just start fucking, you know, scrapping at his face and fucking all this kind of shit, and eventually he falls off a cliff. But like, okay, fair enough, you have it, the Eagles know their call sign, you know, whatever. Why are the Eagles happen to be there? You've been taken away and dragged off
really
and
high up as well, the like they've climbed up really high. I
mean, yeah, so it's like, so they don't know why the Eagles happen to be around there, and why those particular Eagles all knew to have the thing. I didn't really explain that, so I thought it was a bit weird. And just the
can the Eagles hear an ape chant from a mile away? Like,
I don't know. Sure.
It just seemed like a little bit of cinematic convenience.
If there's any ornithologists who are listening right now who know about how to communicate with eagles, do drop us a line.
And how do apes do that?
How do apes do it? So they have their fight. He falls to his death, and they go, Noah and his family go back to rebuild their home. And May shows up to his camp, and I absolutely loved this. Like, she shows up and she's looking pretty clean and fucking normal looking. But she's showing up, and she's not sure he's going to react. Like, you see her, she's kind of standing there with her hand behind her back, and they're having the talk about whether, you know, is there going to be peace or what is it going to be? And it's so, you can feel the conflict, you know, and he doesn't want conflict. They never wanted conflict, but now he's seeing now what it's like, what life outside his little village is like, what humans can be like. He's seeing her kill people, and we get a shot just behind her back then, and she has her hand behind her back, and she's got a fucking pistol there ready, because if he does anything, she's going to kill him. Because like she's said, she's cold as well. It's a really great little kind of showdown scene.
Because that could have easily been played so saccharine, like a different way with a character like that. You would think like, oh, they become mates or something like this, or he'll save her and she'll save him back or something like that. That's been played out time and time and time again. But this was a fresh new take on it, where you're just going, oh, she's fucking badass. She's out for what she thinks is the greater good and out for herself. And that's that. But she's
so honest about it.
She's
so honest about it. She's like, yeah, like she's saying this is our world, you know, this is a human's world. We had like, and he was saying, no, humans had their time. This is the apes world, you know? And so she's saying, so he's basically wants to take it back. He's like, it's not your world to take back. And it's just that conflict between them.
Yeah. Cause she says apes can't have what's in there. You know, they're not ready for it. Yeah. And he's like, well, who the fuck are you to say what we can have? You know, like, who are you? You know, this is, it's a great back and forth. This is our world. No, it's our world. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's cool. And as you said, it sets up what could be some fantastic storylines in the next one. So she goes off and we see her going into this, she finds this bunker, and this girl comes out and she's in a hazmat suit. She's like, holy shit, not just other talking humans, but they've got fucking proper ass technology.
Yeah, yeah.
So she goes in, gives her that SATCOM hard drive thing, and they're all in there working on fucking, like, a bunch of dorks working on IT fucking shit. There's technology everywhere. And we see all these satellite dishes outside. Yeah. And when she puts in this lad, this must be, I assume when she goes off on her missions, she probably has to go and collect a bunch of these fucking things. But when she comes back, she puts it in, and next thing they're able to align the dishes. And when the humans start speaking on the radio, they find out there's other smart humans out there with radios too. So I don't know. It is, you know, what will, if this is the end of the movie then. So what will the future hold? Are we going to be back on two big battles between the two of them? I mean, if there are a ton of smart humans out there and they find a way, you know, because as I said, she's not saying make humans from now on be able to talk. She's talking about changing the humans that are, you know, basically animals now.
Yeah.
Smart again. Isn't that, that's
that was her that first kind proposed? Of pitch for it. Yeah. So that's the kind of confusing part of it. But I,
yeah, like is some new people, virus going to be released?
Or? Yeah, exactly. You know, some people online have said that like what I thought was an interesting end to it to see where it goes. But other people have said, you know, and I kind of agree that is this setting up movies to kind of tread over the same storylines again, where, you know, humans come back with technology and they have another war with the apes and we just do it again 300 years later. Which, you know, in fairness, I think that's what these movies are billed to be anyway, what they've always kind of been. But like some people like the fact that is it just, you know, apes are in control now and we don't have that technology and it's all about us kind of trying to fight them with what you have. That's what some people thought the movies were going to be about. But I like the direction they're going because I like, you know, us having technology against the apes, and that I love that kind of that imbalance. It's kind of nice. I thought it was an interesting ending. Yeah, I liked it.
It's an interesting ending, but I can see from their point of view as well. I mean, we've had three movies where a story's been told.
They've done it,
you know, that, you know, when the humans have technology, and then it's so I can see where they're coming from. I guess we won't know until the next movie comes out what direction they take. You know, if it's a carbon copy of what we've seen before, it'd be kind of a bummer. But I think there's some interesting stuff here about, you know, with that relationship, especially between the two of them. And I thought they were both great in their roles. Owen Teague was fantastic. As Noah, it was, you know, totally behind them from minute one. He was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. Like, it's not perfect. There's a lot of, obviously, you know, they can be loot or plot holes and maybe a lot of convenient kind of stuff. And there's a little bit of pacing issues here and there, but overall, I thought it was great. That was a really fun watch and a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot more touching than I thought. Like even just the scenes with Noah when he gets to the camp at the end, you know, when he meets his friend who he's obviously kind of has romantic ideas about and meets his mom. It's just those prolonged moments and scenes where they're just head to head, and just it really is amazing performance capture of just the raw kind of emotion of I haven't seen you, I thought you were dead. And there's a lovely moment in when they first go in with May into the bunker place, and when she's walking around to try and get that sat nav info, the three apes, you know, they are looking around and they come across a kind of a classroom. And they're looking through the classroom.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And they're just like, oh, looking around. And then they find these books, and it's like little kids' books or ABC. And they're telling, or Noah's telling them what Rocka had said to him, you know, that these symbols have meanings and all that. And then they open the next book, and it's children at the zoo. And they obviously come to a page where there's a kid looking in through the cages at the apes. And it's just the looks in their eyes looking at, like, wonder at this book, and then kind of from wonder to kind of going, what the fuck is this? Just little moments like that are littered throughout the movie that are just beautiful, like really, really touching, just good storytelling. And just because it's 2 hours 20 minutes or 2 hours 25, it takes its time, and it gives time to those kind of scenes that are littered through it that add that emotional kind of impact or a bit of poignancy that I wasn't expecting. But
I thought something was going to happen, and that's, I figured maybe they'd say something to her or bring the book to her. What the fuck is this shit? Yeah. Like, you know, but there's, you know, he must be so conflicted. Like, he's seen that and he's heard different things. You know, he cared so much in the short time him and Rocka had together. He was broken up about in passing. And, you know, it must be from living in this small little village where they don't go beyond a certain point to seeing what's out there. There's talking humans, all this shit about the past that he had no idea about. So there's a lot for him to explore in the next one. And I do look forward to a sequel.
Happy Days. Yeah, so I would give that 4 stars, I think. Recommend that.
Yeah, somewhere between 3.5 and 4 for me as well.
Yeah. Happy Days. So yeah, that's a wrap for episode 30 of Middle Age Geeks. Thanks to everyone for liking and sharing and subscribing on YouTube and social media. Keep the feedback coming at middleagegeeks@yahoo.com. Any last thoughts, Phil?
No, just echo what you're saying. Yeah, thanks a million, guys, for listening, as always. It's great. Thanks for all the support. And yeah, keep liking, subscribing, sharing. That's about it.
Happy days. Catch you next week.